It's 11 o'clock and time to go to work with Marty Nemko.
Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I think if there's one word that's kind of been buzzy for the last, I don't know, 2, 3, 5 years, is social media marketing, using LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, videos, and all assorted things to get eyeballs to your product, service, or whatever. And I worry. I was just telling one of my, I've got two guests here, which is unusual. We have two guests, one on the phone, one in person. I'll introduce you to them in a minute. But I am worried. It's like, you know, like in the 1950s, there was nuclear proliferation, and, you know, somebody had a 1-kiloton bomb, and then, oh, I got to get a better one, so I'm going to get a 2-kiloton bomb. And then there were all these millions of bombs. The problem with the social media marketing bomb is that it's time-consuming. It's like in the old days, you sent out a press release to the New York Times and to the San Francisco Chronicle. You were done, or maybe you appeared on the Ron Owens radio show on KGO. Now, you don't. Not only do you need a video, you need a cool going viral video, because otherwise it's going to look chintzy. It's going to look cheesy, garbage. You now have to have not only a Facebook presence, but your content has got to be so clever at, you know, the headline is where it starts, but the content's got to be great, and it's got to be refreshed all the time on your site, on your blog, your Twitter feed. At least you've got a Twitter, at least have a tweet at least once a day that's really fresh, buzzy content. And then your LinkedIn profile has to be really authoritative and have lots of recommendations. And are we not gyrating, holy rolling, whirling dervishing into a society where ever more of the, not gross domestic product, but gross effort product, the amount of work we put in as a society, is being spent on the sizzle, not the steak? Is that really the formula for a better world? It's not a better America. We're certainly global now. None of this stuff is constrained by artificial geographical borders. That's the macro question. But the micro question, lest I be viewed as being somebody whose pie is in the sky, is this dude is the way it's going. You don't do this, you lose. You snooze, you lose. So while I like to keep my head in the clouds and my feet on the ground, I got to focus for you, my dear listeners, on both. So I got on my show here, I have two people with their feet on the ground. I have, right here in the studio, I have Nick O'Neill. Nick O'Neill was ahead of the curve. He knew this was the way it was going. So back in 2007, he started allfacebook.com. And that was everything related to Facebook. And then that morphed into a corporation, Social Times, Inc., which did lots of trainings and did conferences all about how to do social media beyond just Facebook. And he's now, of course, he's no surprise. What do you think he's developed in the last couple of years? An app. So he had this Holler app, which I don't even know what it is, but it's not critical. What's critical is he is a pretty smart guy, and he's a pretty smart observer of the evolution of social media marketing, and yet he's also in the trenches. He's doing it all the time for small businesses, for companies, etc. So Nick O'Neill, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. My other torturee is we comb the nation to find the best person. This person is, in of all places, Houston, Texas. Shama Kabani, wasn't it? When she was, you know, she's a young person. She's like 20-something. And she was, she had gotten this master's degree in something. I don't know what it was. She applied to 18 companies to try to get a job. And she was, the big thing she was trying to differentiate herself as her, the thing she was trying to sell was, I think this social media marketing thing is big. This LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter thing is big. 18 companies out of 18 companies rejected her. They all felt social media didn't have a future. So she said, screw this. That's my saying. I'm assuming she said, or metaphorically said, screw this. And so she started her own deal. She's now the CEO of the Marketing Zen Group. Well, she hasn't exactly failed. In 2011, Entrepreneur Magazine featured her as one of four supersonic youth, dubbing her, quote, a Zen master of marketing. She's written a best-selling book. That term is thrown around, but this is actually a best-selling that. And just is coming out next, like in March, in the second edition. The book is called The Zen of Social Media Marketing. Shama Kabbani, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
A true pleasure to be here, Marty.
Good. All right. So let's start with that macro worry. I mean, I worry about everything, but I worry about the escalation of the amazing tools we have for target marketing, whatever it is we're selling. Do you worry, Shama, that we are focused, these great cool tools are making us focus too much on the sizzle and not the steak, which is to the nation's and the world's detriment?
You know, Marty, I think it's actually today much harder to offer the sizzle without the steak because social media is so transparent. So you're right, you know, attention is scarce and competition is an all-time high, and businesses who want to stick around will have to turn up the sizzle. But before that, they have to make sure that that steak is cooked to perfection, because if it's not, the cat's going to be out of the bag pretty quickly.
Good point. And want to add anything to that? Now, you were saying almost the same thing off the air.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then that's good. So okay. So we have to have both. It's not an either or. You got to have some sizzle, or you ain't going to get to taste the steak. So, what do you say though for the people who are say okay in the abstract, I know that's right. I need to do marketing, but so many of the listeners to public radio and this show particularly are creatives. They know they need to market their art, their writing, their small, environmental, sustainable, green, whatever business, but they hate it. They would rather focus on creating content. You know, an artist would rather paint than come up with a really cool Facebook message that says, oh, look at my newest painting, and here is the story of how Mary put my last painting over the sofa, and she loves it, and today only it's 25% off. I mean, that is just anathema to many people who would rather create. How would each of you, both Nick and Shama, how would you try to motivate the reluctant marketer?
Ultimately, I think you're going to have to... you don't have an option not to market it. I mean, you could try and wait to be discovered by some wealthy person if you were an artist, for example. So good luck with that. But, yeah, I mean, most people, they don't really deserve to be working for themselves if they can't market themselves.
Okay, and what would you say? Anything you'd add to that, Shama?
I think Nick is absolutely right. I think, you know, being a creator is now also, being a marketer is being a part of, it's part of that creation process. I think the beauty of that, though, for those people who are really scared, is that you have so many options now. You know, it doesn't have to be that salesy, like what marketing has been for so long or has, you know, it doesn't have to be this one-way street. You really can sort of build the community that you were always wanting. There's so many options now for you to do marketing in a way that's totally not sleazy. And I think that's the part that turns off or scares a lot of people.
Good point. And Shama, it was interesting. I did read your book pretty carefully. And when I write, you know, there's so much in it. And I try to really distill it all. And it really is not so much, you know, diverse approaches. You really seem to identify only one approach to marketing. And correct me if I'm wrong. Your model is you got to post really seductive content like customer stories, you know, on Facebook, on Twitter, on LinkedIn, to drive traffic to your site, which is a highly search engine optimized, or your blog, and then that's got your product. And then once you've got them there through your seductive little, you know, Facebook, you then get them to sign up for your newsletter and the mailings about the great discount, and then, of course, try to get them to make the buy right there. Is there really a diversity of approaches, or is that really your approach?
Well, that's strategy, right? There's many tactics within that that you can use, and that makes sense for you. So you can use the platform that speaks most to you. And so it's really one element. I think the bottom line that I was trying to convey, and I hope that people walk away with, is it's all about storytelling. That's what essentially updates, tweets, all these ads, that's what they are. You know, you share these stories about your business, what you're passionate about, and using sort of these stories, building valuable and relevant content is that that's how you start building relationships with people. That's how you get them to take the first step with you.
Okay, so Nick and you, so her model basically, it's not that it's really that different, but it's, storytelling via your Facebook or in your LinkedIn or Twitter, and then getting them to your site to buy your product and sign up for your e-list so you can direct mail them. Is that what you think is the model, or are there really a diversity of choices, or how would you change that whole model?
I mean, that's the exact model I've been discussing for the past 5 years or whatever. Storytelling is key, and I think the future belongs to what I've dubbed, the master communicators, people that can tell stories and can get their message across to people.
Okay, beyond stories. So now let's go to Facebook, because that's the 500-pound gorilla in this whole game. So, first of all, I want my listeners to get a real edge. So, okay, we all agree you've been for 5 years, you've been touting storytelling on your Facebook and on your Twitter and get them to your site. Okay, great. Well, now in the year 2012, what is a differentiator that's going to enable, beyond that generic advice, that's going to enable your business, your product, your service, your whatever, to stand out from the other zillions of storytellers, other than simply having a high-quality story? Shama or Nick, whoever wants to go.
I think, like I just said, the phrase master communicators, at the end of the day, 2012 isn't any different than 2011. I'm sure new tools will evolve. But at the end of the day, the more people that are part of these different channels, Twitter, Facebook, and other places, just the web in general, the more that your message really needs to be honed in order to float to the top. And so the people who are going to get the most attention are the ones that are able to communicate effectively. So the time that you're investing is really being spent on figuring out how to craft a message effectively and get that across to an audience. And, that focusing on that is going to be the most critical thing as time goes on and more people flock to these different channels trying to get their message across.
So it's basically repeating and just saying high-quality storytelling. Shami, would you add anything to that?
Absolutely. I think, it's all about valuable and relevant content. Nobody wants to hear what you had for breakfast, and yet people do it all the time. You have to find something that people are interested in. For example, we worked with Dallas YMCA this past year for their annual turkey trot, and we provided instructions on how to make a turkey costume. The click-throughs were through the roof. And you wouldn't have, you wouldn't get that now, but because it was timely, because it was right around Thanksgiving and it made sense, it worked. You have to look at what's timely and what are people actually interested in at that point.
So it's not so much storytelling as putting yourself in the shoes of the listener and say, what would make it absolutely irresistible to click through? Is that fair?
Exactly. I mean, what's useful for you at that time? You have to put yourself in their place.
I want to, it's an idea just popped into my brain. I'm curious what both of you think of it. I would think that the greatest thing you could do to improve your marketing skills is to read a book on screenwriting. Screenwriting is the art of telling a story. There are models. For example, you have a protagonist who is this average person, and then there's something really amazing happens that he forces him or her to act, and then you have this really, it's a real question. Will that person succeed? And in the end, of course, in a marketing thing, they try your product or your service, and it brings tears to the eyes of the reader because he defied the odds, and it made him from the average jerk into the superstar, literally and metaphorically. That is one of the standard kind of screenwriting structures that actually began in with Aristotle. Do you agree that taking a course in story writing and or screenwriting is very important?
I individually, screenwriting is an elongated form of storytelling. For me, what I've done is I go to the bookstore, which doesn't exist anymore, or I go to the Safeway or Giant or supermarket, whatever, and I'll just look at the magazine rack, and I'll study the magazine rack to see what type of titles are they writing on there, what type of stories are they placing in there, and what are those stories like. The story writing may not be great oftentimes, but the titles are the things that are getting people to buy. And so I like watching that more than anything else.
Yeah, back to what I was worried about, the sizzle, not the steak. The content ain't that great, but boy, they worked hard in coming up with a seductive title.
Well, you're going to stop buying the magazine, though, if the steak
exactly.
Isn't great.
True. Shama, anything you want to add in terms of, my notion that learning the art of storytelling is maybe the most important thing you could do to become a better marketer?
Absolutely. I mean, I studied communication, and I feel like it was vastly more useful than if I studied business, even though I run one, because you learn these things. And I think I'd love to see schools, and you see more of this happening now, incorporate these things, teach kids from an early standpoint of what is your digital footprint, how do you build that, how do you learn to communicate more effectively in 140 characters, how do you, you know, how do you get the steak, but also make sure that you have the sizzle to attract people.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemko. The topic, how to do social media marketing, how to use the new world of Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter substantively to improve your business, your ethical business, I certainly hope, and differentiate yourself in a market where everybody is aware of the importance of that. And the key, apparently, is really good, putting yourself in the shoes of the listener and ideally telling brief but great stories, sometimes even in 140 characters or less. I want to turn to, you know, right now what seems to be hot in Facebook are two things. Contests and events and Open Graph. Any comments about those three things?
I think events and contests, you know, these are standard marketing tactics. We're just seeing a lot more of it because communication channels are so open and we're exposed to all the different types of communication that people are having. Rather than going out of the house to go see a contest or being pulled into a restaurant because of some discount that they're offering, we're seeing all of these things simultaneously in a single channel. And so we're just seeing the exposure of all those different things. Personally, I actually don't see a lot of contests on Facebook because I'm not active on the apps or the pages actively. It's usually me communicating with my friends. So that's not the type of content that I'm seeing. But for marketers, it's definitely a common, you know, a ploy to try and get people to engage with your content. And at the end of the day, I think the content itself that you're creating, contests are just one form of it. So whatever you can develop to generate attention through compelling content, you know, is always great.
Shami, have anything non-obvious to say about contests, events, or Open Graph?
Absolutely. The only underlying theme that I see that's common in all of this is engagement. So you've got people, right? You've got them into the headline. They think it's cool. They bought that magazine, to go back to that earlier analogy. Now, how do you get them to go back to the newsstand? You know, how do you get them to keep engaging? Because even, let's say, 100 people like your page on Facebook, the chances that how many of them are actually seeing those updates? A handful. So you have to keep upping that engagement meter. So you've got them. Now, how do you keep them? And that's the million-dollar question, Marty.
Okay, well, that's what we're trying to look for answers. Anything beyond, we're saying again and again, compelling content, compelling storytelling. You know, is there anything else you want to say on about the art of the million-dollar question, keeping your likes? Now, it's really easy to click like on Facebook. Keeping them and making them loyal to you and say, I want to read this person's stuff. I want to buy this person or small business's stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you just look at contests, for example, you know, the two things that they have to have is be relevant, and they have to inspire others to participate as well. You have to sort of go back to the human psyche and say, what is going to make them tick? So for this one client who sold pet food, we did a Valentine's Day contest where he said, you know, get your pet to show this company love, and by uploading simple 2-minute home videos. And it was a blast. And then they got their friends to vote for their video to win. I mean, it was wonderful. The people had a great time, and the brand got a lot of exposure. And I think that's where the sweet spot is.
I think I think that's where we should be going. Is talking about maybe some specific examples of successful Facebook campaigns to give our listeners inspiration for what works. But I realize I've used a term that many listeners may not know. It's so obvious to me. Open Graph is the modern day version of Facebook Connect. Who wants to define what Open Graph is?
Open Graph is just a syntax, to be honest. It's more like, meta tags in your HTML pages. That's actually all that the phrase relates to, and it has to do with the fact that it's not just people that are part of this graph. There's businesses and things that are also incorporated into this graph, and that's really all that the Open Graph is about.
It's all about analytics. Shami, want to try to explain it in really plain English for the non-technical people? What is the role of Open Graph in Facebook?
Facebook says I do and gets married to other websites.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that. Say it again, please.
and then Facebook and other websites get married. You know, the external, all the other big websites work with Facebook, and they say, yeah, let's get married. We'll share information that we get, and you'll share information that you get from users.
All right. Let's go back to that concept of examples. Any other, either of you, examples of successful, ethical, non-cheesy marketing campaigns done on either Facebook or Twitter, you know, any of that combination of, or Google Plus, which we'll get to in a minute?
I can share one that I think of that's fun. And again, it's all about sort of finding that right moment. There is one individual on Twitter, his name is Peter Shankman, and he tweeted to Morton's restaurant and said, you know, hey, it would be great if you met me with a porterhouse steak in 2 hours after I land at this airport. And it was a joke. And he lands, and 2 hours later, there the Morton Steakhouse is with that steak.
And
I mean, it's great because, you know, does it happen every single day? No. But it was amazing to show, you know, this company really showcased that they were listening. Right, that they were willing to play. And, I mean, they've got tons of press. It was wonderful. And you see so much of that. You see these big companies really bringing this human aspect of interaction. You know, I've heard so many stories where people say, I can't get anybody on the toll-free number. I need customer service. But the second I go on Twitter and talk about it, there's something new.
Okay, Nick, do you have an example?
Yeah, well, the biggest one I know of would be like the Old Spice campaign, which wasn't even really as active on Facebook. It was just a YouTube video where they had the good-looking guy sitting there answering questions of and responding to all the people who were on Twitter. And, you know, that was massively viral. In terms of, you know, impact that it had, that sort of like display advertising type of marketing, like Old Spice trying to get their message out, you know, on an individual basis. I think the ones that I'm more interested in are like the individual people that, you know, they spend their life just passionate about something and communicating with their audience. And, you know, I have tons of friends and people that that I could, you know, Heaton Shaw would be one. He writes about entrepreneurship on Twitter. He has a site about or products that are targeted towards entrepreneurs to monitor all their stuff. And he just focuses a ton of effort on providing targeted content at his audience or into his audience for free. And so just by giving all of these, you know, tidbits of information, he helps build relationships with his audience.
And he's actually monetizing because there's 10 million people who are entrepreneurs blogging and tweeting about entrepreneurship. I mean, it's certainly, yeah, I'll just say that. How does he break through the clutter? Do you know if he really does and monetizes it?
Well, for him, you know, he does because he has a product that he monetizes, Kissmetrics, and he makes, you know, money off of this product and had another one, Crazy Egg, that did the same thing. And so he just sells a product. And at the end of the day, for free, on their company's blog, they'll post information that's relevant to the audience. People that are just writing about entrepreneurship, it really depends on what your objective is. For him, the objective is selling customers on their product.
Okay. You know, we've talked about video a bit. I want to talk about this, and I think I'll talk about a little personal example. You know, I recognize, and I was seduced by, I don't know, I think it was maybe Shama, it was in your book, but I certainly read a statistic that 80% of the growth in eyeballs in the internet is going to be visual, video. People love video. So I've just finished publishing my sixth book. It's called How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School. And I looked into the possibility of creating a 60 to 90 second promotional video that potentially was going to be viral and wasn't going to be cheesy. Well, I did some searching around American sources, and it was going to cost me between $1,500 and $10,000. And then I found out on Odesk I could get an award-winning studio in the Philippines to do it for $400, including creating animations, stills, voiceovers, everything, and clever and funny. Is do you think it still took some time to create? It's still in the process of being made. Is the creation of video like that, with some clever little anecdotes and videos, and maybe little, you know, various sexual things, if as appropriate? And is that a way to? Is that kind of thing that in 2012 is worth doing if it's done well?
I mean, you need to communicate through the channels that you're best at communicating. At the end of the day, if you write, that's what I do. That's how I communicate, and you know. Video happens not to be the way that I communicate. If you're if you're really good at it, then awesome. That you need to go after that channel. And I find that the people that are most effective at these various mediums is really the people that's the medium that they focus on. It's great if you're an NBC or some huge, or even NPR in this case, you need to provide the different channels or provide content for the different mediums, but you need to communicate via the medium that's best for yourself.
Right. You don't have to be the person on camera. As it happened, I'm going to be on camera for a little bit, but I'm going to have an animation, for example, of a couple fighting over the guy who keeps throwing his underwear on the kitchen floor, and it ends up being in the end of the fight where it's Thanksgiving, and the wife throws his underwear right on the turkey there, and you know, and he doesn't have to be on stage. The point is, it's got to be illustrative and entertaining. So do you really have to be the on-air? You can be terrible on-air and still, you know, in front of the camera and still create something that's potentially viral.
Well, yeah, I mean, let us know after the fact how that video turns out.
Yeah, I have no idea. Shyam, do you have anything to say about the role of video in social media marketing?
My take's a little different on that. I have some personal experience I'm happy to relay as well. I think video is very powerful, and I think the reason that all these mediums that we're talking about and why it makes sense to do all of this is because people are used to options. If you think of us for a second as consumers, not as marketers, not in the context that we're talking about, we're very demanding folks. Think about a book 5 years ago. How are you going to get it? Hardback, paperback. And Nick said earlier, bookstores, yeah, they don't exist anymore. But you think about how you can get that information today. There's at least 101 ways, just that book alone. It's the iPad, it's the ebook, it's the Kindle. I mean, there's so many ways to consume that same information. And so people are used to finding sort of what they prefer. And if there's people out there that prefer video, and studies show that they do, I mean, you've got an overwhelming majority right now who watch videos versus read books or read posts, and you're going to be able to reach them, Marty, through this video, people that you may not through other channels. So it's really about widening that scope. I started a web TV show 2 years ago, and before that, I'd been blogging for 2 years. My first video got more views than, you know, my most popular blog post had within 2 years.
Interesting. So you talk about the fact that there are hundreds of these, you know, and that's been the theme throughout this. There are hundreds of, quote, ways to access people. But that brings us back to our initial problem of people being scared. How am I going to have time to do my work if I'm all in doing or focusing on the sizzle? So let's make this concrete. So let's take my book. Let's take How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School. Shyam, if you were to say, you know, Marty, you got 5 hours a week you're going to spend on marketing. We know you hate marketing, but you got to give me 5 hours a week. What would you tell Marty Nemko to do in 5 hours a week?
Okay, well, I'm going to boil this down for you, make it really simple. The first thing I would say is look into a Facebook ad campaign. We've had a lot of success doing Facebook advertising for small businesses, for authors, because you can get that really targeted, and it doesn't take too much of your time, Marty. So you'd set it up. You'd say, I want people between the ages of X and Y who live here, who are interested in these topics, and they're the ones I'm going to market this book to.
Okay.
Great. You send them to a page that you have created exclusively for the book and where you can interact with the readers of the book. The next thing you do is you have that great video, you put it on YouTube, you put it on your website, you go ahead and syndicate that video. There's software that will pretty much automate that process.
Really?
Getting
What's that
video out.
Everybody would like that, to know how to syndicate their video. What's the software for syndicating video?
There's one called TubeMogul.com. There's another Denmark company called 23video.com. There's tons of software out there that will allow you to syndicate video.
Okay, anything else you would add to my five-hour-a-week plan for marketing money? And again, dear listeners, this is not about me. This is about your art or your plumbing business or your environmental consultancy. We're just using my thing as a specific example, but anything else you would do in 5 hours a week?
One of the very simplest things that I did to market my book, first edition, was set up a search column on Twitter for the book name. And anytime someone said, I'm considering reading this book, what do you think? I would jump in and say, hey, I know the author. They're willing to answer questions. Let me know.
What's a search column? I don't know what that means. What's a search column?
A search column. So on Twitter, most people who use Twitter use a desktop application to manage it. Even if you don't, on Twitter itself, you can search for any key term or phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And you can save that search. So it's kind of like Google Alerts. Anytime someone mentions that keyword or phrase, so you could set one up for your name, your company name, your book, and anytime that pops up, you can be a part of that conversation. I can't even begin to quantify how many books that's just sold for me.
So you just create, let's say, you know, it's Mary the Artist. So it's, you know, you search on Mary the Artist. Well, that's fine. You're searching every day, or is there a way to get alerted when somebody, I mean, how do you make sure that you get to know when somebody's saying anything about Mary the Artist, and then you start this conversation?
It's automated, and you can choose how you want to set it up. So you can do it so it shoots you an email and lets you know someone is talking about this. You can get it on your phone. If you're not like that, and I'm not, I don't like my phone buzzing every 10 seconds.
Sure.
I just log in once a day on Twitter, look at my search column, and communicate and answer to people who've talked to me. See, it doesn't have, it gives you the ability to be instant, but it doesn't have to be instant. It just has to be timely.
Okay, last question. Not so long ago, I had Guy Kawasaki on the show. He's another guy who's very much involved in just networking and marketing in general. And he, what shocked, the one thing that most I will remember from that interview is I asked him, how do you spend your social media time? And what shocked me is he said he spends most of it on Google Plus. What are your thoughts about Google Plus? And then I'm going to end the interview by asking each of you how you spend your social media time. So what do you, each of you, Nick O'Neill, what do you think of Google Plus?
I think it's great. I mean, I use it right now. I don't spend most of my time on there because that's not where I get the most interaction.
First, define it. What is Google Plus and how is it different from Facebook?
I mean, Google Plus, how
Facebook
is it?
Groups, yeah. How is it different from Facebook groups?
Well, Facebook groups is just one feature of Facebook. I think Google Plus is basically Google's, you know, equivalent of what Facebook is with integration into your Google account itself, into email, into all of their other different products. It's them trying to socialize Google.
Exactly. So is it worth, from your perspective, is it worth your time? Or if you've got Facebook, is it worth also wasting your time being active on Google Plus?
Well, I wouldn't call it wasting your time.
Okay.
I think it's definitely worth an investment because Google is so invested in it. So just like if you were interested in search engine optimization, which is going to have a payout for you eventually, or have a return on your investment, so while spending time and learning about these different communication channels, this one being Google Plus, it's just another channel, and becoming familiar with it can never hurt you.
Any knowledge, any one tip on how to use Google Plus to help market your ethical small business?
Just keep communicating the same way that you're communicating through the other channels.
Okay.
Is really the...
Shama, what do you think about Google Plus, and how would you recommend, what's one tip on how to best use it?
Okay, great. So Google Plus, Facebook, a big differentiator. The reason Google Plus matters, kind of like what Nick alluded to, is because it's owned by Google. So we've seen creating, you know, a profile on Google Plus shows up the next day for that phrase on Google on first page. As a small business, that's really, really important.
Google's so powerful.
So that's why it's important to be there on Google Plus. The other big premise of why Google Plus is different than Facebook, and I'll tie my tip in here, is, you know, the premise was Facebook treats every friend equally. It doesn't differentiate between different types of friends. Google Plus came in and said, we'll let you put people in buckets and share information that's
circles.
Only relevant with that bucket. Wouldn't that be fun? So now you can say, these are all the people who've been on my radio show. Here's all the people who are you know, my friends in my offline life. Here's all the people, here's all the journalists that I really like to follow and I look at their work. So you get to organize your social media life a lot more easily. And for a business tip, you know, especially if you're looking to reach out to digital influencers and build those relationships, use those circles. Create one for your clients. Create one for prospects. Create one, you know, for your salespeople. Create another for authors and experts that you like who you get to learn from.
Okay. I think circles are junk.
Good. Let's hear it.
I think it's a waste of time. Facebook did the same thing before where they had friend lists where you could segment all of your friends. And every time they give users the opportunity to do it, we mess it up. We're like horrible at organizing our friends into groups, and those groups are always changing and all sorts of stuff. I don't use it. All I go on there is to communicate once in a while with people that I know. You can go take the time to do that. And if you're really organized and you like having all of your folders in the right place, then go for it. But I think it's a waste of time.
All right. Let's end by, because there is, you know, I in putting myself in the shoes of the listeners, I feel there's going to be a lot of listeners feeling overwhelmed. And one of the ways we can reduce the overwhelm is by asking each of you to say, how do you actually spend your, how much time and what you actually do with regard to social media networking, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, Google Plus, all of it. Let's start with you, Nick. How much time roughly a week do you spend on it, and how do you allocate that time?
Well, I mean, to be perfectly transparent, I spend a lot of it on Facebook, and it's not doing things for the benefit of marketing. It's because I'm busy stalking people. I think Twitter, Facebook, in terms of all of my promotional activity, you know, I write a blog post and then I just share it on my own pages, and I talk with people and get into the comments and converse with them about the content that I've created. I'm heavily biased towards developing compelling content, and that's where I invest all of my time is when I have an interesting blog post that pops into my head, I just write it and get it out there. And that's where I really focus most of my efforts.
Thank you very much. And Shama, how do you spend your social media marketing time?
I spend about 80% of my time creating content, similar to what Nick said, in terms of researching information for our clients, writing blog posts on how to do things, answering other people's questions on social media. So 80% of my time goes towards that, and 20% goes towards actually responding to people, sort of initiating and having these conversations. Not sure that we're the perfect models for how someone who may be starting out wants to model it, because I know when I started out, I spent a lot more time building those relationships, learning the ropes. I think I believe that Nick and I are at a point where we've sort of built up that following, and now we're more in maintenance and managing mode. Mm-hmm. At least I know I am. I know that when you initially start, it does take a lot more effort, but it's, you know, it's effort that pays off in the long run.
Okay, now I would be remiss if I didn't give you at least a chance. This is all about marketing. If I didn't at least give you a chance to briefly pitch what you want to market to our, so those listeners who feel like you'd like to gain something to access your content, or otherwise interact with you, Nick O'Neill, what would you like to tell them to do?
You can just visit nickoneill.com.
Okay, and O'Neill is spelled the normal
with
way.
With two L's.
And it's one word, and just Nick, O, no apostrophe?
Can't put that in a URL.
Exactly, so nickoneill.com.
Yep.
Cool. And Shama Kabani, what would you like to market about yourself?
Well, if you're looking for more information on social media and online marketing in general, you can find us at marketingzen.com.
Marketingzen.com. And you both have been very excellent in improving my sense of zen around the whole social media marketing thing. I want to thank you both for being my guests on Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you for the opportunity, Marty.
Take care. Bye-bye. Okay, and now it is your opportunity. Dear listeners, if you want some career help, I don't care if it's about social media marketing. Probably, you know, I mean, I do know something about it, but any work-related problem, you know, you're starting 2012, you say, damn it, I want to make this school year, this work year, better than the past, and you'd like some free advice, the price is great. I call that a workover, a three-minute workover, three-minute career makeover, whatever you want to call it. This is the time to call while the lines are available. The phone number here for three-minute career makeover on KALW is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for the calls to come in, last week was my annual show where I make my predictions for the year, and didn't get a chance to get through to all of them. So I thought I would share a couple more of them while we're waiting for your calls to come in. I believe, by the way, are there calls on the line already? Or no? Or those? No? Oh, I think I should take that? Okay. All right, we'll take the call. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. Hello, are you there? She left. Okay. One of my predictions for 2012 is that more students are going to seek their education outside of universities. There have been in the last year or so, there have been a number of recent books and articles that have exposed how little learning accrues from all that time and money attempting to acquire a college or graduate degree. And even if you manage to triumph and get the degree, the amount of employability is pretty terrible. You know, I was just listening yesterday to CNN, and yeah, 61% of computer science majors are getting a job within 6 months or a year of college. But those are the very best computer science majors. You know, all of those majors, as they were saying, in the arts are just not getting employed and have this enormous debt. I mean, that's why Occupy is so frustrated with higher education. So I think that higher ed in 2012, finally higher education enrollment's going to slow. And that is not that people always have a thirst for learning, but they're going to be an increase in the number of online certificate programs and one-time online-based trainings like webinars that are going to be provided not just by universities, but by professional associations, trade associations, you know, American Optometric Association or whatever. And I picture Skype being a major platform for those kind of simulated in-person classes. I also think that that universities are going to, you know, because they've really been battered by a terrible reputation, they're going to go the route like people are now going with their e-books. They sell them for free or 99 cents to try to just get traffic, build relationships, to quote what to cite what was just said by the previous guest. So, for example, MIT is soon offering online courses free to anyone. So I predict that one of my predictions for 2012 is that more people are going to seek their education and their training outside of universities. And now let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, Marty. Am I on?
You are.
Thank you. Yeah, this is Matt from Millbrae.
Hi, Matt.
I wanted to share what I had about social media and marketing. I'm currently reading your excellent book, How to Do Life, and I don't believe your URL is listed at the end of it. And you've got a fabulous blog that could use more this. It's just underutilized. And I was thinking, I saw your video about the book. And at the end of each creative project, whether it's a book or a video about the book or whatever, I think it's a good idea to always have a link to your website or a screen at the end of your video that says, for more information, go to martynemko.com or something like that. That way you connect all your disparate pieces of creative work and you steer everybody to Grand Central Station, which is your website.
You are absolutely right. I know that in my soul. And, you know, I am so obsessed. People don't believe me because I'm on the radio. They think I'm marketing-oriented. I am the least marketing-oriented guy in the world. I don't even have a mailing list. You can go to my website. I have no mailing list. I have nothing. I love creating content. I love counseling people. But you're absolutely right. It's very generous of you to call, Matt. I'm going to see what, you know, in the beauty of publishing on CreateSpace, Amazon's CreateSpace, is you can make changes on the fly for next print edition, and certainly the Kindle edition, which is going to be coming out in a week. I'm going to absolutely put my website address at the end. You're a kind man, Matt. I appreciate your calling.
It's a real idea, and keep up the great work.
Thanks so much. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air.
Hi, Marty. My name's Tara. I'm calling from San Francisco.
Hi, Tara.
I have two questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
First, regards my son. He's a junior at UC, and he's a political science major, honors student. He's great with people, and he is taking a computer programming class mm-hmm. right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he has also experience working with Best Buddies and as well as a couple of computer app companies.
Mm-hmm.
So he's really pretty much able to do whatever is set in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And we were wondering, how do you think he should approach his year after college?
Well, there's, you know, obviously, this, you know, just based on what you've said, one of the most likely economically viable ways to merge political science with computer skills is uh-huh. to be in the whole area of database campaigning.
Okay.
The Obama administration has an enormous team, and I saw pictures of them. They're all young guys who right. are busily writing programs to identify target districts, what are their psychographics, what are going to be the right words and phrases that are going to be most likely to get them to come out to vote and vote for Obama. And this is an ever more sophisticated art. So I would think that if he's interested in poli-sci and programming, that the yeah. best way to spend his next year would be as an intern working for one of these agencies, these political campaign consultancies.
Okay.
And he should make a look, you know, I believe in trying to aim high. So I would be, you know, I am while I have mixed feelings about President Obama, I am have unequivocal respect for what an outstanding campaigner he is.
Yeah.
And so I would, if it were me, and if I were, you know, and if he likes President Obama, I would find out who
Absolutely.
Was...
Absolutely, I'm working on the campaign.
Okay, there you go. So I would encourage him to, and you may have a lead for him, but I'd rather him find out where is the kind of the brain center of the of that whole computerized campaign planning process,
right,
and let him get an internship there. That
well,
putting...
he's taking a course in campaign politics as well.
Great.
This semester, and
great.
He's really into it, and he also worked on the 08 campaign.
All good.
And he
but...
made some connections then, so this is just perfect. This is absolutely spot on.
All right. Well, yeah, let him aim high first. We can always scale back later, but there's no reason in the world why he shouldn't aim for the best, and I'm absolutely convinced that the Obama 2012 political campaign there... and it is so computer-centric, it is social media-centric, will be the most sophisticated operation in American history. And that's where he will really learn a lot about what works in the real world.
That's
okay.
Great.
You had two questions. You said you had another question.
I have one other question.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned online courses becoming much more prevalent. What are some of the credible online course institutions?
Right. I would avoid the universities. For me, what, you know, content is king. The word online is merely a delivery system.
Right.
But I value tremendously it depends what I'm trying to learn, but if it's something to enhance my career, if I am a geologist, before I go and take a course at MIT, I will much rather take a course in, let's say my field is seismology, the subspecialty of geology. I'm interested in earthquakes. I would go to the American Seismological Association and see what online webinars, teleconferences, certificate programs they offered. And that's where I'd focus. Now, of course, some of it is crap, but I would sooner focus there than I'll send you to a university where there, you know, there's certainly almost all universities doing some online teaching, but I would... If I was trying to get practical knowledge, I would avoid the universities.
Okay, I have one final comment.
Okay.
Zen marketing seems like an oxymoron.
I know. In some ways.
Okay.
I think what she didn't talk about, but Zen marketing is, you notice how many times during the interview, when I talked about marketing your business, I always prefaced it with the word ethical.
Mm-hmm.
I think as long as your marketing is ethical, as long as you're not using hype to attract attention, as long as you're not being dishonest, as long as your product is ethical, meaning kind of triple bottom line, it's good for the people, it's good for the planet, it's good for profits,
yeah.
It's good. You know, I think you can do that and still market ethically. It's when that's where I think she is.
Teddy bears wouldn't be shilling for toilet paper on my television.
I say it again, please.
I said if content was really that meaningful, teddy bears would not be shilling for toilet paper on my television.
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah, that level of attention getting doesn't bother me. If, in fact, you know, there is a toilet paper that is stronger and is less likely to get crap on my hands, I'm willing to allow teddy bears. It doesn't violate my level of zen, okay?
I didn't mean to reduce this to the scatological. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, take care. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. Hello, are you there? Hi, it's your turn.
Hi, my name is Heather.
Hi, Heather. What's on your mind?
And I'm the girl who emailed you a while ago about wanting to be a funeral director.
Oh, yes. Okay. Why don't you bring our listeners up to speed? Tell me the situation, and I'll try to provide additional level of help.
I basically was at a career standstill and was trying to look at something practical with something that would never go out of style, as it were, and
exactly.
I decided that
Alas.
Would be the way to go.
Well, someday we'll reach the great singularity or whatever. Well, I don't even mean be that. I think, you know, eternal life may eventually happen, but we're certainly a long way away from that. But anyway, continue.
Indeed. And I'd emailed you about that, and to make it short, you advised me that perhaps because of my temperament that it wasn't the best fit, and I eventually came to the same conclusion.
Okay.
That I don't think I'm suited to it, maybe.
Okay.
So I have an interview tomorrow for a job that I really, really, really want. It's for a nonprofit radio station here in the city.
Three reallys. That's pretty good. You must really want it. You say, I really,
yes,
really, really want it. Yeah. Okay.
Triple really do.
Okay.
And I'm very good in interviews. I'm articulate, et cetera. But I have a concern about the double-pronged potential questions of what are your weaknesses and why did you leave? Well, I left one job in particular, the one that's most pertinent to this one, because of various morale issues. And I'm not sure how to address it when it was a negative leave.
Okay. So my way really isn't, we're back to the Zen concept. I really, none of us are perfect. And so I always, the whole field of counseling people on interviews has been around for two decades now. So whenever you give the stock answer to what are your greatest weaknesses, well, I work too hard, or, I really don't need to have a sense of perspective where not all workers are going to be as smart or hardworking. That is just seen as total BS. Or even if you state a weakness, say, well, I'm working on trying to improve it. I'm really, my skills on spreadsheets are not that great, but I'm really working hard. It feels like BS. And so I am inclined to go with radical honesty. So, and the example I've used on this radio show before is this. I would be saying something, my greatest weakness is I'm terrible on teams. I know we live in a society that values teamwork and collaboration, but I'm terrible on teams. I feel frustrated. I either talk too much or I have to shut up and I feel like I'm constraining myself. So if you're looking for somebody who's mainly going to be working on teams, you have the wrong person. If you're looking for somebody who is truly, as they say, a self-starter, you give me a project, it's going to get done. And yeah, I don't mind sending drafts of what I write to other people for input. But if it's a lot of meetings with teams, you don't want me. That's my greatest weakness. That's going to have far more credibility. And so I encourage you to relatively briefly state your one weakness and then move the conversation to the future, which means what, not your past, but what you will do for them that would be a differentiator, make you a more desirable candidate than the other four or five people who are interviewing for the job. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. And in terms of you're having left from a bad experience, let's take the worst case. Let's say you were fired for stealing stuff from the previous employer. Let's make it really bad. The right answer is to very, very briefly and state, I made a terrible mistake in my previous job. It's something, frankly, I learned a lot from. And I'm hoping that, I think all of us have probably made a mistake. Let me tell you a little bit about why I'm so excited about this job. You move the process and you talk about what you would do if you were hired for this job. So you're not BSing, but you're very briefly addressing the negative and then quickly moving on to the future, what you would do for them. That's the best way you deal with a bad situation, even in a horrible situation where you were fired from stealing for the employer. And it sounds like what you were guilty of, if you were guilty of anything, was something to do with morale. It's not like it was that horrible situation. Does that make sense too?
Yes. So basically, be honest and then refocus.
Very briefly. There's the biggest mistake the job seekers make is they tend to want to dig themselves out of the bad stuff. So they give long answers to the hard questions where they should be giving short answers to the hard questions and longer answers to the easier questions. So the resultant overall recollection that the employer has of you is the good stuff, right? Because you spent most of the time talking about the good stuff. Make sense?
Yes.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemko. Before I go back you're welcome. Before I go back to the phones, I want to offer one more of these predictions for 2012. I've not been perfect, but I've not been too bad. Let me see. What do I want to talk about in terms of these predictions? I do think women will continue their ascendancy in the work world. I'm very involved in these kind of issues, and women's advocacy organizations like Catalyst and Emily's List and AAUW and the National Women's Law Center and National Organization for Women, of course, they're ever more influential with the media and with the government. For example, last year they pushed through a White House Council on Women and Girls. That was at a time when 80% of the jobs lost in the recession were to men, and that men die 5 years younger, and yet they were able to push through a White House Council on Women and Girls, but not, because frankly, I am on the on a commission to create a national council on boys and men, and it was rejected completely by the Obama administration. But it's emblematic of the fact that we are in an era where women's advocacy organizations are having tremendous influence on the workplace, and in general. Additionally, And ever while, you know, I do believe that the actual value added of degrees is, it has been in the last year, there's just been study after study showing how limited it is, but it still helps in the job market. And an ever higher percentage of degree holders is female. There is no affirmative action for men, even though 60% of the most recent year's graduates, college graduates, are women. And then many employers use that as a screening tool for hiring. So, and colleges and schools continue to try to be ever more, let's just be polite and say female friendly, and we'll say a little bit male unfriendly. And so that ever more empowerment of women in degrees and in their self-esteem that come from the way their women are portrayed in higher ed is going to make women ever more powerful in the workplace. In addition, the government continues, despite the fact that the unemployment rate is higher for men now than women by a lot, the government continues to provide pro-woman initiatives. For example, special training, special grants, special loans by the U.S. Small Business Administration, and actual priority, numerical priority in the scoring systems for women and minority-owned businesses when trying to, if you're a small business trying to obtain a government contract, if you're a woman, you're going to get an edge. And, of course, ever fewer jobs are requiring physical strength, which is one area men have an advantage. So one of my predictions for 2012 is that it being woman's era will continue to accelerate. And the only thing I can say to men is, you know, this is going to seem wishy-washy, but it's my honest best answer. I've spent a lot of time trying to restore a measure of fairness to men, which I believe does not exist in our society today, and it's actually accelerating the other direction. I think it's pretty hopeless. I think this is a tsunami. This is a tidal wave. This is women's era. And so men have to, whatever they can do, to try to resist becoming depressed or angered by the often anti-male messages and policies. You watch a sitcom, you watch the TV news, you know, you watch movies, and in general, it's the males relative to the females who are viewed as inferior. You've got to try to, you know, it's like many minority parents used to tell their children, you got to be twice as good to go half as far. You've got to redouble your efforts, men, to succeed in this work world that is dramatically changing. You know, it's not just perception, even in the work, you know, this whole notion of a workplace that's ever more collaborative and team-oriented, you know, and where there still is affirmative action to ensure that women get promoted to higher positions. This is not a good time for men who, you know, on average tend to be more competitive and individualistic. You've got to adapt. And it's I don't have a magic answer. But it's just like those minority parents said, you got to do it. It's not easy, but it's probably necessary. Anyway, that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Eric Jansen, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. You can call in for a 3-minute career makeover, workover, whatever you want to call it. And I spend a lot of time thinking about how I can help my clients replace procrastination with willpower. And so has my guest, a guy named Piers Steele. He's the author of The Procrastination Equation. We're going to put our heads together and see if we can come up with some pretty effective ideas for you on how to replace procrastination with willpower. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
More than 500 of Marty Nemco's published articles and chapters from his book, Cool Careers for Dummies, are free on his website. From there, you can also email him if you'd like coaching on your career or want to comment on this program. His site, MartyNemco.com. That's Marty, N-E-M-K-O.com. Join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemco here on 91.7 FM KALW San Francisco.